Good morning, everyone. Dangok, Nidapiak, Nilthuisel, Bemused Muin, Nilgwenik, Pilomial, Nilabanaki, Gakigelwisid, Imi, Wajukaman, Gukmasnuk, Wajukaman, Musumsuk, Wajukaman, Skidabek, Wajukaman, Apijik, Wajukaman, Nagagakigelwisid, Wazizuk, Wajukaman, Naga Imi, Gakigelwisid, Sanke Suikon, Nolu. I just opened with prayer so that the spirits here would know I'm here. And I asked for help for all of us on this this journey, this really important journey that we're all on. And I asked that the grandmothers, grandfathers, mothers, fathers, children be helped on this journey. And then I ask that we be blessed with peace everywhere. And so, again, a good morning, friends. I want to thank you for inviting me to talk about the journey that we're all on. This is a journey that I have come to see as rooted in a commitment to profound healing and the uncovering of the plentiful and the generous world that lies in wait for us. We do not need to create her because she already exists. But we do need to recognize her, respect her, and protect her. And in order to accomplish this task, I'm going to use a word that I think friends will resonate with. We need to be in right relationship with her. We need to prepare ourselves. It's been a long journey to where we are today, to finish this journey that we have in front of ourselves. Perhaps the hardest part of this journey, we must heal and we must love. There are two values from my culture that I'll circle around this morning. The first is Malugariban, which is the coming together in unity to do the good thing. And it's a core value of indigenous cultures. And the second is Gzalmal. And Gzalmal is love. And in our language, this concept of Gzalmal encompasses both the love that I would have for my newborn child and the love that I have for my community, my creator, my relationship with the earth. And so that love is deep and intimate at the same time, that commitment. It's also the love of our ancestors and our traditions, the love of our families, the love and gratitude for our creator, and centrally, our love for ourselves. This morning, I trust that we're all here in love and in commitment to do the good or the right thing and to do it together. You may not fully know it, but this power is unbreakable power. It is what I call the power of the peaceful. So I'm going to tell you a story about transformation, and the story of the service committee. After peace work, which is the service committee's central work, the work to end the suffering caused by the criminal justice system is perhaps the oldest area of work that the AFSC has engaged in. For over 80 years, we've documented human rights violations in jails and in prisons and in the communities that prisoners come from and that they return to. We've done really good work. We've proved that certain practices, isolation and the death penalty, constitute torture. And the United Nations has accepted our proof. We've closed down segregation units and we got innocent people out of prison. But while we did this, the U.S. prison system grew to be the largest prison system in the world, with over 2.5 million people in prisons and jails across the country. Yes, we won, but we were losing in the most painful of ways. We were losing our young people, and we were losing our children. You all know the truth. Black men are more likely to go to prison or jail than to avail themselves of any form of higher education. In some urban communities, 80% will spend some time in prison between their 18th and 30th birthdays. In Native communities, 60% of our adults will be incarcerated, and the incarceration rate of our youth outstrips all other racial and ethnic groups. And this truth cuts very deep, because the other side of it is even more real to us. In these same communities, 90% of our children live in poverty. 95% qualify for school lunch programs. And 96 to 100% of the children in these communities report themselves that they have first person witnessed violence. This is the other side of this reality. And so we ask ourselves, what do we do? And it was at this moment that AFSC decided to shift its focus from the criminal justice advocacy and policy work to healing and transformative justice. Our programs were overnight renamed Healing Justice Programs. But we had a problem. What did this mean? What was healing justice? We weren't sure, but we were sure about where to look for examples. In Aboriginal communities that have served 500 years of genocide, and through the practice, and they've done this through the practice of traditional healing ceremonies. In African American communities that have survived slavery and the focused oppression of structural violence and racism. And most poignantly, for today, for this morning, to Quakers and others who have been committed to peace work and to restorative justice. So in order to make this change, we had to think a little bit differently. First, we understood that crime was essentially harm, and in addressing harm, we needed to heal. And secondly, a very hard truth given the structure of our society, that punishment did not advance healing. But accountability and responsibility did. The second change in our thinking was about rights. In consultation with Aboriginal leaders, we learned, and I knew this myself growing up around my language, that in Aboriginal languages everywhere, globally, there's no word for rights, none whatsoever. That concept doesn't exist for us. But what did exist was the idea, the deeply held truth, that part of being the human beings, and that's who we are, we're the human beings, nothing more, nothing less, and that part of being the human beings was having the resources to be responsible. These concepts were rooted in our work. So instead of rights, having the resources to be responsible. Responsibility, not entitlement, is more the core of our understanding of relationship. And we found that very helpful as we thought about what healing justice might be. So we took a year, and eventually we came up with a set of indicators that a healing justice project was present. And these healing justice projects are programs that, and I'm going to list them to you, there are six indicators, and I'll tell you how we came to them. The first is implementing the principles of responsibility, mutuality, and love. So think about programs that you know of that do these things. Second is repairing harm at all levels, personal, communal, governmental, and international. Creating the ability to take care of yourself, your family, and all your relations by providing protection from immediate danger and providing sustained emotional, physical, and economic support. These programs that are supportive of being able to lead our lives in a good way, and building the right and mechanisms of self-determination to transform pain and anger into empowerment and action. And then lastly, and maybe very, very difficultly, building access to the mechanisms to hold community and governmental entities to these same principles and actions when they cause harm. But in order to get to this set of indicators, we brought together three nationwide gatherings. We brought together Indigenous spiritual leaders who modeled for us a methodology of listening, our way to understanding, through the use of a ceremony simply called a circle. In this circle, we learned that this journey was both a way of life and a methodology for our work. We learned that many of the problems that we address in our work are the result of historic, and this is really crucial, and intergenerational trauma. We realize that that historic and intergenerational trauma is intertwined almost with our DNA, that we know it without being taught it. We know the historic trauma that all of our people have been through, and that we were healing from harm that was happening in our own lives at the same time that we were healing from the cumulative harm of 500 years of genocidal policies. And any work we do had to be conscious. Oh, and any work we do had to be conscious of this. And then we brought together formerly incarcerated people and their families. And we learned that embedded in our healing process was a seeking for tools to address unresolved grief. This grief is intertwined with healing from historic trauma, and from the harm that we have caused or experienced in our lives. And this is really, given the amount of harm that we've all lived through to get to where we are today, I find this so amazing that the structures of our society really do not create space or allow for grief. When we, after the work that we've done with people who have lost their children to the street violence in Boston, with a group of mothers, we developed a peace curriculum for the urban schools in Boston, and it was the first curriculum nationally that had a component on grieving. It would seem that when you experience that much loss, that grieving would be part of it, but we don't acknowledge and we don't create space for grieving. And many of us really don't even know how to grieve, and if we don't grieve, that grieving is cumulative. It builds and it builds. And for these men and women who had formerly been incarcerated in their families, the grief of surviving the slave trade and its incalculable harm, or the harm of genocide, was intertwined with the grief for what I've done to others and the grief for what I've lost. In this group, the men and women grieved not only for their victims, but they grieved for their own lost youth. And they grieved, and most poignantly, for the severing of the intergenerational ties that caused such deep trauma to both their children and their elders. And then lastly, we brought together people who had lost their loved ones to murder and who were working to bring healing to themselves and to their communities. And here we learned about forgiveness. Not forgiveness of the person who did the harm, but forgiveness that the harm happened at all. And that was that's a profound truth. And we learned how trauma can fray the connection that we have to this abundant world that awaits for us with full healing. And this world is really willing to reweave that connection and forgive the devastating loss that we experience, and that is both that loss, that forgiveness is both transformative and foundational. And so oftentimes when, you know, we've contemplated forgiveness, it seems quite like a burden. But when these individuals and families who had made that journey from that loss of their loved one to a place of healing of relationship to the earth and forgiveness that this bad thing happened, there was such a transformation and such a foundation for healing in all aspects of their lives and in all aspects of the communities that they touched. And so I leave you with the challenge. It's a shared challenge that we face in AFSC's Healing Justice Program. Right now, a lot is at stake. I think we are all very aware of that on every single level. As an Aboriginal person, I feel the grief of the earth. I feel the grief of the earth right now, most poignantly. I'm fearful that our healing is so necessary, because if we don't, she's gonna really, really suffer. We're at a point where we must make a decision. And do we continue this journey and the hard work that's ahead? Do all of us do this hard work together? And that's the hard piece. Sometimes we don't want to work together because we've all been harmed. Those who have plenty and those who are struggling, we've all been harmed. It's been a very difficult journey. Do we do this hard work of healing from historic trauma and intergenerational harm, of addressing the unresolved grief that from this trauma, of forgiveness, of personal healing, of taking responsibility? And do we commit ourselves to come together to do the good thing and really love each other? Our abundant mother stands all around us with her arms open and just waiting for our yes. And I guess I want to reference just for a moment before I close, among our children, our Aboriginal children, there's a new movement, and you might have seen it on the internet. It's called the Idle No More movement. And it's very joyful. It's not about protest marches or speeches. They come together in a mall by the thousands, and they begin to drum, and they do a round dance that goes all around the mall, and then they leave. Or they'll walk down the side of a highway or lead in rush hour traffic. They got in the middle of rush hour traffic, and it's going slow anyway, so they just let it with the drums singing the traditional songs. And they're doing this because started in Canada, a bill was passed that took 80,000 protected rivers and waters and unprotected them from exploitation, which means our water will become unsafe. And these kids, they tied everything together. They tied it together with their going to prison. And they said, well, we're not going to be idle anymore. A little joke is, your check engine light is on, you know. We're not going to be idle anymore. And joyfully and peacefully, we are going to wake up, and we are going to wake everybody else up while we're doing it. And we're going to work together, because that's what we must do. And one of their big slogans, and they carry it on cardboard boxes, is power to the peaceful. And so that's a image that I leave you of Aboriginal children who, I told you, go to prison more than any other racial and ethnic group. And their message to us is power to the people. And then when they stopped the trains last week, the kids all ran along showing a sign to everybody, excuse me, I'm so sorry for the inconvenience, but I'm trying to change the world. And so, and people have been accepting it. So, again, I thank you. I hope our answer to our abundant mother is yes. And I'll thank you in my language, Chi Wuliwan. And the word for friends is nidapiag.